Blog Talk Radio.
Presents the Duke of Earl, Mr. Gene Chandler, with co-host myself, Beverly Black, and Marshall Thompson. Marshall Thompson, the leader of Soul School Music and Tribe Family Channel. We're honored and proud to welcome such a legendary person as Mr. Gene Chandler. We're waiting for Mr. Marshall Thompson to arrive, and while we're waiting, excuse me, I'm going to tell you in depth about Mr. Gene Chandler from his biography at his website, genechandler.com. It goes like this. From 1962 to 1990, Gene Chandler put 19 songs in the top 40, but he will always be known all over the world as the Duke of Earl. His first hit that topped the pop and R&B charts in 1962 and launched his career. In 1957, Gene became a member of the Dukes, a rhythm and blues group with a strong rock and roll sound. After a stint in the Army and singing solo in the Army, he returned to Chicago in 1960 and rejoined the Duques. Bernice Williams, a young music business manager, heard the group perform and quickly agreed to manage the young group. She arranged an audition with Nat Records in Chicago, and the Duques were offered a recording contract. Their first professional recording session was late in 1960, at which time they recorded The Girl Is Evil. They recorded Night Owl and Duke of Earl in 1961. Night Owl was recorded first and out for distribution when they recorded The Duke, but the creation of The Duke of Earl was a bit more unusual. The Duques would warm up by singing Do, Do, Do in various tones and pitches. Gene started singing Duke, 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 and from there added fellow member Earl Edwards' first name to complete the phrase. He then began composing the lyrics on the spot. It worked so well, and they were excited that this was a potential hit. They immediately sang the lyrics to Bernie, who in turn added more lyrics. They recorded The Duke of Earl, but getting The Duke of Earl released, however, was the hardest part. Nat Records released Night Owl, but was unable to get the distribution rights for Duke of Earl. Calvin Carter, A&R man with VJ Records, absolutely loved the tune and especially liked Gene's singing style. Carter was more interested in Gene alone than in the whole group sound and felt Gene could top the charts easier as a solo artist. While Night Owl by the Duques was shooting up the charts, BJ was holding back the release of Duke of Earl because Gene couldn't decide to go solo or stay with the group that had a hit 45 on the charts. In January of 1962, Eugene Dixon became Gene Chandler, taking his first name from the actor Jeff Chandler because he thought it had a romantic ring. Under Gene Chandler, he released solo records while still under contract with the Duques as Gene Dixon. The Duke of Earl was finally released, and it sold a million copies in little over 1 month. It was a huge hit, number one for 3 weeks in 1962. It dethroned The Twist from its number one position. Wow. Gene began to dress like the Duke of Earl. He wore a monocle, cape, top hat, and cane. Gene usually ended his concerts with the Duke in full dress, leaving the audience totally wanting more, and for the most part, he would go back and sing Rainbow, a very successful R&B tune that was, again, his signature style. Rainbow is the only tune Gene recorded three times, once in 1963, again in Rainbow Live 1965 with Constellation Records, and then finally Rainbow 80 with Shy Sound Records. Simply all of his recordings on Rainbow were a tremendous smash. Rainbow was one of the songs that Curtis Mayfield of The Impressions wrote for Gene. In addition to Rainbow, Curtis wrote A Man's Temptation, which Gene recorded around the same time while under contract with VJ. Gene's collaboration with Curtis Mayfield proved to be a match made in heaven. Mayfield's songs made Gene a first-rate ballad singer. These soft, tender, sexy love songs went over well in concert with Gene's falsetto slides, sent ripples of excitement through the ladies in his audience. Gene then signed with Constellation Records in 1964 and ended his tenure at Constellation when they closed in 1966 and Chess Records purchased Gene's songs. Gene's manager, Carl Davis, signed him with Brunswick Records at the same time. The two record companies ended up altering Gene's record releases, one new single, then a re-release of an older recording. Finally, tired of the road and no viable new hits, Gene turned his attention to the business end of the industry. After all his successes, Gene decided to put his energy into producing, arranging, and helping other acts. Gene formed two music publishing companies, a production company, and was president of Bamboo Records. Gene's biggest hit at Bamboo Records was Backfield in Motion by Mel and Tim in 1969. Gene selected this song, cut it, and sold millions of copies. In 1970, Gene signed with Mercury Records and recorded Groovy Situation. The strength of both of these tunes got him nominated for Producer of the Year Award for the National Association of Television and Radio Announcers. Gene won the Natural Award in Houston, Texas in August of 1970. He beat Norman Whitfield, producer of The Temptations, and Gamble and Huff of the Philadelphia Sound for the award, an astounding accomplishment considering the popularity of the Detroit and Philly Revolution in that time period. Groovy Situation was a top hit that summer, selling another million. Gene's disco hits were extremely popular in the UK in the 70s and 80s, and Gene collaborated with reggae star Johnny Nash in London Get Down. Another million seller absolutely rocked the disco revolution. Gene was with Shy Sound Records as executive vice president under the direction of Carl Davis. At the same time, Get Down was recorded. Back in high demand, Gene ended up back on the road to perform on the concert circuit with notable Wolfman Jack's Oldies tours and extensively performing solo in the Northeast, Las Vegas, and in California, and of course, Chicago. Today, Gene still lives in Chicago and attributes his successes to his faith in God. His romantic performance style, along with his superbly rich voice, still makes him a hot number and fabulous performer to contend with. He still packs them in decades later. Nothing can stop the Duke of Earl. Nothing. And he's doing just fine. So, ladies and gentlemen, before we welcome the man of the hour, let me bring in Mr. Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shy Life and the co-host of Soul School Music right here on Tribe Family Channel. How you doing, my brother?
How you doing? Good evening.
Good evening.
And we got my mentor on tonight. That's fabulous for today.
You know what? We owe it all to you, and we can see by reading his entire history in depth, and not his entire history, but I'm going to be privy of a conversation between the two of you gentlemen. But I wanted for our listening audience all over the globe right now to understand the depth, the measure, and the history and the legendary legacy that you two men combined contain. And we can see the connection as we get into Shy Sound Records when Gene came along, and then also that history with Carl Davis. So, ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Thompson, without further ado, right here live on Tribe Family Channel Soul School Music, it is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to welcome the legendary Duke of Earl, Mr. Gene Chandler. Hello, Mr. Chandler. How are you?
Hello. I'm just fine. Well, what an introduction.
Yeah. I don't know what to say now. It's all been said.
Well, I had to let our audience have all of it. Go ahead, Marshall.
Now, welcome, Gene. You know, Gene is my mentor. I know the world should know, most of them know it anyway. I talk about him all or every interview I do across the world. Gene, we have a lot of listeners across the world listening to you tonight, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And I'm very glad to catch up with you to get you out here to do it. I mean, Gene is fabulous. Gene invites me every 4th of July to his home for a fabulous dinner. And we just go crazy over there. So it's my pleasure.
Wow. Well, that's what we want to find out all about. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Chandler, before I start posing questions to you gentlemen.
Go ahead and pose your question.
Oh, I thought you were speaking. I'm sorry. You know what, Marshall and Gene, if I may, for the sake of saving words, I'm going to be talking a lot here, but it is an honor and a privilege. Now, I know I read Mr. Chandler's bio from his website, but there is so much rife conversation and gems that I expect to extrapolate out of the conversation and sitting at you all's feet listening to your history. First, I want to start with Mr. Chandler. First of all, let me just set the tone, because I was born in 59, so you recorded The Duke of Earl in 62. I was three. Now, my parents and grandparents must have been sashaying around the house to it, because I've always known the song since I can remember, but I just didn't know I was that young. So that's, again, another honor and a privilege of mine. But when did you know that you had this cavalier, this je ne sais quoi about yourself as this romantic the vocalist, this entertainer, if you will, this ladies' man? When did you know you had it in you?
Oh, I think when I was about 5 years old.
I believe you. So you just on the playground at in the sandbox wooing them?
No, actually what happened, my parents always went to a 4th of July picnic out at a park on the far west Chicago. And I always sung this song. I don't know why I love this song. It was Danny Boy. And at 5 years old, I could sing. What can I tell you? And they asked me to go up on the stage and sing Danny Boy. Well, of course, as a little kid, I didn't understand about being frightened. I sung Danny Boy around the house all the time. So I just went up there and sung it. And, of course, you
now,
know.
Now, around the house, back up to around the house. I'm sorry to cut you off, because for somebody to know they have it at five, what were the influences around the house that you aspired to? What were you listening to? Describe the dynamics of the home for me.
Well, of course, I listened to the songs that my parents played. And once in a while, they would have a gathering at the house. And I was supposed to be in my room asleep, of course. But, of course, I wasn't. Peeping through the door until I saw somebody coming that way, and then I would run and jump in the bed. But anyway, you know, at their parties, they would play these songs: Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, some Frank Sinatra, some Tony Bennett. Who else was they playing? Louis Jordan, Duke Ellington, and that kind of thing. And so I got to learn a lot of those. Then they would take me to the Rico Theater, which was about, I would say, maybe just a block away from where I lived. I lived close to the corner where the Rico was, like maybe a few steps away. And so they took me around there a few times to see shows, you know, and rather than get a babysitter, they took me. And my little feet wouldn't even hit the floor. I was just, you know. But I always remember Billie Holiday. They had this, whenever she would sing, instead of showing her whole body, they would have this round pen light right on her face, and she always had this flower in her hair. And of course, I realized when I got older, I realized who Billie Holiday was, but at the time I didn't. But I always remember that act, because they only had showed her face when she was ready to sing. The lights may come up after she did a song, but when she was going to another song, and most of the time she sung slow songs. You know, that was the kind of voice she had. And they would pin light on her, and it was very exciting to me. And as I got older, I said, one day I'm going to be on that stage. And, of course, it did happen, you know. But those were some of the experiences that were around the Rico Theater. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, that was before I met Marshall and the Charlottes. As you said, I came home from the Airborne Rangers, and I had planned on being a single artist.
Okay, wait, pin that thought right there. Pin that thought right there for me before you go and transition into that. And this is one of the things I wanted to point out, and we're going to let you tell us about Rainbow. And the reason why I want to bring it in now is because you bring up the Regal Theater. Now, as I did my research on Mr. Gene Chandler, the Duke of Earl, and as I explored the internet, the so say knowing all things of, you know, history and legacy and information, it's the information highway, what I did not see on Wikipedia, and they will be corrected first thing business morning, is I did not see under the Regal Theater where they noted that you performed at the Regal Theater. But tonight, right here on Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson, we're going to hear the live version of Mr. Gene Chandler singing Rainbow at the Regal Theater. Tell us about Rainbow, what inspired it, who was with you, what just made you evoke such passion, and then we're going to go into Rainbow at, live at the Regal.
First of all, let me say I hold the attendance record for the Regal Theater. It was monstrous. It was monstrous that particular week. The owner at the time was S.B. Fuller. He was a cosmetic product company owner. And he had bought the Regal Theater, the corner all around to a department store called South Center. In any event, he came back to me that week and asked me what was I doing with my money. I mean, it was very successful that week. Not only was it successful in attendance, it was successful at the candy counter. And he told me that you wouldn't believe what I made on the concession this week. And he told me he made $50,000. Of course, that was early. And that was a big deal. When you consider
a big
all the,
deal. That's a big deal right now. If today, you know, for real. Wow.
He's just trying to advise me on what to do with my money and things of that nature. But, excuse me, Rainbow. Rainbow, written by Curtis Mayfield, of course, the company, Calvin Carter, who was the A&R director of BJ Records, and then there was Carl Davis and Bill Bucky Shepherd. Carl and Bill was my producers, and Calvin is the one who discovered the Duke of Earl and asked to buy it for BJ Records, which became their first million seller that they ever had. But they didn't like Rainbow. They thought it went too long before it got through the chorus. And, of course, I was crazy about it. So, in the session, when they were going after a song called You Threw a Lucky Punch, the answer to Mary Wells, You Beat Me to the Punch. And I didn't too much care for that. I didn't want to answer anybody. I wanted to do fresh new things, you know. But in any event, that's the record they were going for, so I said, okay. I said, well, why don't you just put Rainbow on the other side of it and make it the B-side? During those days, we didn't go too much for the B-side. The A-side was the main thing, and you would just put a record on there that was on the album or the album you were going to do. So now when I hit the road, I wouldn't sing You Threw a Lucky Punch. I wouldn't sing it because Rainbow was my song that I thought was the hit record.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I kept singing Rainbow, You Threw a Lucky Punch was going up the charts. Okay, that's fine. I kept singing Rainbow, and each time I would sing it, they would always call me back. They would call me back for more. And in the process, I began to develop the second part of Rainbow.
Mm.
That's how. And all those things you heard, you reach out and bite you and all that kind of stuff. It was just keeping the song going. And each time I would come out, I would think of something else. And then finally, I developed what I call part two. Now, the first one was released in 1963. And that's when I began to sing it. As time went by, though, let me kind of jump back before we got to the album at the Regal Theater, which was live.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from Carl Davis one day, and to make a long story short, he said to me that, I guess you were right about Rainbow. A DJ in Richmond, Virginia, turned it over to Rainbow, and a DJ in Newark, New Jersey. And both of the jocks told him in each one of those cities that the telephones lit up. He said,
So in other words, they flipped it over to the B-side to check out the
correct.
B-side. They're DJs. And so they're listening
correct.
To the A-side, but they flipped it over to the B-side and went nuts.
And the record just took off. So now, by the time I reached the Regal Theater in 1965, 2 years later, I've already completely developed Rainbow the way I wanted to do it, because they would always call me back. So now I'm doing part one and two together. And they wanted to do Rainbow. Well, they didn't want to do Rainbow, but because it was in my show and they recorded me live, of course, they captured it. Now, once they start listening and listening to the response of the women in the audience, you know, you cooed that in, this, that, and the other, and screaming and hollering, they said, you know what, Gene, we think that we should release Rainbow again and call it Rainbow 65 Live Part 2. And, you know, and so I said, okay, if that's what you all feel. They released it. It became a hit all over again. Now,
wow.
The reason why I said, talked about Rainbow, because it's the only song that I know of that an artist recorded his same song three different times and had a hit three different times. In 1980, 15 years later, after 65, we had 3 years prior to the 1980, we had began to take records from the 60s and drop an oldie in each new album. And now they say, listen, let's do Rainbow. I said, man, we had a hit off of it twice. He said, yeah, but we should bring it back and just do it because it's Rainbow. Since we're doing oldies, let's put Rainbow out there. So what we did, we went in the studio, and for the first time there were girls in the background, and we recorded it live, well, not live, but the live version in the studio straight through. Tried to make it as close to the live version as possible, but doing it the same way in the studio. Now, they released a song called Does She Have a Friend for Me? It was going up the charts. When the jocks got the album was called Rainbow 80. Wouldn't you know that? So the jocks jumped on it, and kids who weren't even born in 65, here's 15 years later, it was a hit all over again in the album. So I've had 3 years
off
of Rainbow.
Well, you know, that is just amazing, amazing. And it's time to bring it back around, because you know what? I have to dub you. Marshall Thompson, you being the godfather of vocal groups and the last man standing of the Shy Lights, I was thinking today about Mr. Gene Chandler. I said, you know what? This man is the godfather of true love school music. I mean, we're talking before the Temptations and the Dells and Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. We are talking, you are the godfather of true love music. And so I'm dubbing you that right now. Yes, Marshall, we better believe it. So without further ado, we're going to listen to Rainbow live at the Regal. Gene Chandler, our special guest right here on Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson.
Start time at the Regal. Young man went out and made a name for himself. He's been on every record-breaking show in the Regal Theater in the last 2 years. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of our show, how about a nice warm round of applause to welcome Mr. Gene Chandler!
Thank you so very much.
Yeah.
I'm down on my knees. Oh yeah. I'm asking you to give me one more chance, just a one more chance to prove to you. I bet I know I was wrong. And I realize now, baby, and I realize now, baby, that love only comes once, and when it comes, you better grant. Thank you, then you may not come no more. And I'm asking you, baby, 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 and I'm asking you, like I just wanna reach out, baby,
and
I just wanna ask you one thing, baby, I just wanna ask you one thing, baby. I want you to stop this rainbow in
Marshall, I see how you got to be where you are, because if this is your mentor, and I believe him to be your mentor, and that's the kind of undergirding that you have, no wonder there's so many of us populating this planet. That is love music.
Yeah, that's the man. That's
the background. You hear the lady in the background hollering, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Mr. Chandler, that was... Go ahead, Marshall.
I was in the Regal Theater when he was singing that. You know, I mean, girls was tearing my ears up.
Wow.
Hey, Beverly, I told one of the girls, I said, why don't y'all just shut up?
Well, you know what? I want to give you a chance to jump in here, Marshall, before we continue on with the backdrop of Mr. Chandler's career. Marshall, when did you first hear about Mr. Gene Chandler, and then when did you first meet him?
Well, first of all, when he had Duke of Earl, you know, those songs like that. And then when he did Rainbow, I actually was trying to sing Rainbow myself because I used to go to the Ringo to hear Gene sing the songs all the time. And then Otis LaVelle was trying to get me to come down there to see Mr. Carl Davis. And that's when I got a chance actually to meet Gene. And we got together, and then Gene took us on the road on a tour. And I was very excited about it. He was the one that the Shylights got their first dollar on any gig, you know, being with Gene Chandler. You know, the first he gave us the first nickel and dime for the group of the Shylights in our history. Yeah, he's the one that did it. He took us all over the road. And people didn't even know us to Gene got us on his dates. Gene was the star of the show, and we just went along with him, you know, on all the dates, all up and down Texas, all up Oklahoma, everywhere. You know, we didn't have a hit at all. We were just out there. We had a good group, but we needed somebody that with a big record and a star, a real star, to make us stars, and that's what happened. Gene took us along his wing, and look how far we went.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that. Go ahead, Mr. Chandler.
I was one of the first, the first big artist that Carlton ever had. I started with the Duques. That's when they started their record company called Nat Records, N-A-T. And, of course, you read most of the story in the bio. I came home. They waited. They didn't want to wait because they had picked the group, the Duques, from the lead singer that they had. But they did wait. And, of course, they liked what was happening for me voice-wise. And the group was formed and to go on to record. So now, when Calvin Connor picked that particular record, Duke of Earl, because the first right of refusal went to the guy who picked the Night Owl record. So now, when I get with the company, they asked me for the first right of refusal that I wanted to go with the Duke of Earl record or stay with the Night Owl record, which was our first chart record that was going up the charts. And, of course, I was excited about that. But I had a lot of confidence in myself, and I said, if I go with the Duke of Earl record, which I wrote it, so I said, at least they're going to allow me to do an album, and therefore, if the Duke doesn't hit, I'm sure that I can come up with a hit record in 10 or 12 records. And so that's the rest is history. The song came out, and we went on from there with the Duke. And, God, there's a lot more stuff. You know.
Wow. Now, before let me rewind a little bit, and that's just amazing. Before we played Rainbow, you brought up that you had gone into the Army. So tell us a little bit about when you went into the service. What was the backdrop of this nation and the landscape? How old were you when you went to serve? How long did you serve? Give us a little backdrop. Because, you know, obviously we are in a volatile climate right now as the nation unfolds. We just had the elections last night, and we're not going to skirt around the fact that we are in another dimension in the landscape of racism in America, because never before have we had such a racist political platform with all of the different dynamics that came out. What was the landscape like when you went into the Army? What types of racism did you have to overcome as you broke through the ranks of the Army and the ranks of your professional life as a performer?
Well, when I went to the service, it was in the early 50s where Truman had ended segregation in the Army between blacks and whites. And so, in other words, from that point, everybody lived in the same barracks and they fought together and did everything together. There was no discrimination. Truman ended that. Well, I got in there in 57. I was 17 and a half years old. My mother had to sign for me because I wasn't 18 yet, and I had 3 years to do. And that's what I did. I went in for in the airborne rangers, and I did that time. While I was there, I sung in a lot of officers' clubs, and I enjoyed it. They started sending me on tours around to different countries in Germany and different cities to sing for officers in the officers' club. And I kind of liked singing by myself rather than with a group. And I said when I came home, I was going to sing by myself rather than get back with the group. But, of course, they had a recording contract, and so I went for that, and that was that. But during the time with Marshall
wow.
and them, coming back up to date,
mm-hmm.
we went out on this tour. I had an idea to work with the jocks around the country, and we would get 60 and they would take 40. And not only with the jocks, in each city, I worked with everybody, every radio station that was playing at that time. So if there was three radio stations, they were all working on the same show, and they were all partners, and all jocks shared into the monies, including the Weekend Jocks, which is where I got the idea from. Generally, the station manager or the program director would be the one that would put on the shows because he put the records on. And so people would come in and do shows for him. I was on the Weekend one time, as usual, coming on like a Saturday or something or a Friday. And this young guy asked me to do a show for him. I said, you know, I can't do that because, you know, the guy who runs the station is going to handle that. But it gave me the idea, and I sold it to the jocks at each station, including the program directors and what have you, and they went for it. So that meant that when you come in town and when you live in that city, no matter what jock you listen to, what station you listen to, you're going to hear about the Soul Spectacular. That's what I named it, the Soul Spectacular. Now, Marshall and them, of course, didn't have a big hit out at that time, but it also gave them the opportunity to meet different jocks as we traveled around the country, because that's what I did when I travel as a single act. I would stop at little small stations. Guys would never expect for me to stop there, but that's the station we heard as we came through their city. So I made a stop, and they were totally shocked. So I got to know a lot of jocks around the country and know them well, and they would always play my songs when they came out. It was just a friendship. I was no payola, nothing back that was going on. And some of those jocks at those small stations and those small cities that might be able to sell, what, maybe 50 records for you or something, they ended up being big jocks in bigger cities, and they always remembered me. So I decided to use that leverage to talk to all of them by going along with this show on a percentage basis. And at the company, I wanted to take all the acts at the company so I could expose their talents. That was a little hassle about it at first when I brought it up, but the acts ended up going along with me, and we went on the tour, and that's how it all came about. And we did fantastic. I remember Marshall.
Now, let me ask you something, because, you know, you bring up radio jocks, and at this particular time, I'd like to pay honor and tribute to Mr. Herb Kent, and I know he was a very, very dear friend of both you and Marshall, and we want to just honor him. We know that he is smiling down on you, and he's probably thinking something funny about you. I enjoyed hearing his voice when he wished Marshall Thompson a happy birthday on the birthday show that we honored, Marshall's birthday being August 24th. And we had a show last week in honor of Mr. Herb Kent. So we're going to play this song in honor of Mr. Herb Kent. It was a favorite of his. And I want you two to both expound after this song on when you first met him. Right after, Just for Your Love by the Memphis Horns, a very favorite of Mr. Herb Kent. We honor you and your legacy. Rest in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
the most beautiful picture of the three of you, Mr. Herb Kent, standing in front of a birthday cake, Mr. Marshall Thompson to his left, or excuse me, to his right, but you're on the left of the picture, and then there's a woman to his left, and then there was you, Mr. Gene Chandler. I don't know if you remember that picture, but it is currently floating around on Facebook, and I can email it to you, but I thought that it was just a phenomenal picture to see such legends together. I'd like to know, what type of relationship did you have with Herb Kent? When you speak of the DJs, Gene Chandler, how was that relationship? You and Mr. Herb Kent met where, how?
Well, we had a great relationship. I was there with Herb when he was big, and I was there to assist him when he went down. And then he came back, and he stayed once he came back. And I don't know if a lot of people don't know it, but Herb was, for one thing, he was 88 years old. He never lost
Bless
his voice. He sounded the same way he did in the 60s when I met him. And It was just phenomenal the way he could be on the air and sound exactly the way he did, and he was 88 years old. Now, in the beginning of the year, I don't know if it was January or February, but he had just signed a new 3-year contract for more money. So, at 88.
At 88.
He was number one in the
city.
He was going on Saturday mornings and Sundays in the evening. I had the privilege, they called me and asked me to sing, but I don't usually sing at funerals. And I said no, and then I was getting ready to go to bed that night, and it dawned on me a song I could sing for my friend as a tribute. And it was a song that for decades he would close his show with this song. It was Father, Open Our Eyes. And I called him up and told him that I would sing, and I wanted to close the funeral with that song, just like he closed his shows with it for so many decades. And they awarded
God
me that.
God touched
that,
your heart.
And
God touched your heart before you went to bed. That's, I get that sense from you. And so I want you to be able to, you know, say that because, you know, we're on a family show. It's our show.
Yeah, there's two songs, two funerals that I've sung at. Two. Only two. And one was Barbara Acklin, and the other one was Herb Kent.
Herb Kent. Well, I just wanted to acknowledge him. And Marshall Thompson, I know that you also were very dear and near to Mr. Herb Kent. And so we continue to hold you up in prayer. You know, it was just nice to see the two of you. I have the picture of the two of you, Gene Chandler and Marshall Thompson, together at Mr. Herb Kent's home going, and so we just wanted to acknowledge all of you and your brotherhood and what have you. And so, Marsha Thompson, continue to tell me about the impact that Gene Chandler made on your life when, you know, once you all met and began working together.
Well, we've been working together. He started to tell you, he was getting ready to tell you something about me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, and I was going to want to hear that off of him as well. But,
that,
go
you
ahead.
Know, he started
we were. You understand?
That was
he gave
Marshall.
Me the yes?
Okay. I was going to say, Marshall, I was getting ready to say that one of the cities we were in where the Coliseum was at, and we filled the Coliseum with that show. And
yes,
Marshall, Eugene Record, Squirrel, and Red came upstairs to get their share of the money, and it was so much money that they sit on the floor counting it over and over, and I was trying to tell them to leave the room because somebody else wanted to get paid. They kept counting the money. But, I mean, that was a good thing, and I felt good about that because they had never made that kind of money from singing, you know. I know how I work with myself. We get $5 a night, $10 a piece a night, singing for cabarets and all that kind of thing.
you know, you start off small. You don't have a record out, you just sing it. And when you was at one cabaret, there was a bunch of other people that had them, and they would hire you for theirs. And that's how I got started. And I'm sure Marshall and the Charlites have done some things like that during that time. So when they went out there without a hit record, I was just trying to expose them. So, but they got paid the same thing that everybody else got paid. Because there were some other groups that hadn't became that big yet. But the whole idea was to expose all of the acts at Brunswick to get us started. As a matter of fact, you know, Marshall, when I took the tour for the second and last time, Barbara Ackland's Love Make a Woman broke while we were on the road. Because they were planning, and she had to fly to Dallas to do a TV show.
That's correct. Yeah. That's just correct. Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of
fun. Now, and you know what amazes me? I'm so, I'm in awe that Curtis Mayfield wrote Rainbow. He is by far, rest in heaven, one of my most enamored songwriters, composers, musicians, singers. In fact, I am in communication with his son. And we're going to have right here on Soul School Music a show that honors Mr. Curtis Mayfield, and his son will be on that show, and we're going to be listening to his music. I definitely want to have you call in, Mr. Gene Chandler, because of that relationship with Curtis Mayfield. So I just wanted to say that. Now, gentlemen, we have some calls holding, and I don't know if they wanted to say a word to you. I generally don't take calls. I like to keep the conversation flowing. I like to keep it authentic. And, you know, just for professional sake. But I'm going to open up the phone lines and allow a caller to speak to these legends, and we're going to get back to our show. So let me see if caller, area code 601, are you there?
I'm here. My name is Bobby Ray.
Bobby, how are you?
Hey, fellas.
How you doing, man?
I just want to tell you guys, I'm doing great, man. I feel good. I'm an old man, but I feel good. You guys have did a great job. Marshall, I know him so well, but Gene, I know you well too, but not as well as I know Marshall, but I always like what you've done, what you're doing, and all the things that you did through your history. I was hanging out with Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and all the guys like that because I'm a little bit older than you two guys, you know, but I always respect what you did and what you was doing, and you're a great entertainer. You put a lot on my heart and taught me a lot of things, although I'm maybe a little bit older. So I just appreciate what you guys done. So congratulations, you guys.
Thank you,
Bob.
Give me the opportunity to say the same favor back to you, and I feel the same way about you and your career, and you're still here doing what you need to do. And so I appreciate you also.
I want to say one thing. A lot of people know you as Duke of Earl, but you have so many other records that was in the pot before that time, and since that time, people think that's not the only record, but I personally know your career and what you've done and what you did. It's a great thing. I just want people to know that some other thing besides Gene Channel, besides Duke LaBerry, you're doing a great job, and you're still here doing it, and bless you guys here.
Well, Bobby, since the world is listening, we're going to tell them about your new record. You got a great new record out there, buddy, and I appreciate you listening to that.
Porcupine Meat. This is my 377 record.
Wow. Well, you know what, Mr. Bobby Rush, it's an honor to meet you. I'm Beverly Black, the creator of Soul School Music, here live on Tribe Family Channel. Now, if I'm not mistaken,
great.
You're going to be on Marshall Thompson's show November 23rd in 2 weeks. So we're looking forward to
that.
And yes, So, Mr. Gene Chandler, you know that we'd be most obliged if you could call in We know you're a busy man, but, you know, Mr. Bobby Rush, we're going to be playing some of your old music and some of your new music and get to know you. And I want to thank you for calling in and talking to your friends.
Well, thank you.
Are you going to continue holding
and
listening?
Thanks so much. Well, thank you, Gene. Happy days to you guys. Tomorrow is my birthday, so I'm 83 years old tomorrow, so I'm partying tonight.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you, man.
Wow.
Thank you, guys.
Wow. Wow. Well, Mr. Rush.
I would send you some of my wine. I'm coming out with the Duke of Earl wines.
Well, that's very good. Very good. Very good, man. We'll do that. And make sure we Marshall, I get in touch with you. We get Gene now, and we'll sit down and break some bread together, man. Just a few of us left. So I appreciate you guys and hold it up and hold in the road. And God bless both of you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Bobby Rush, before you go, we got something we want to say to you.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you and you and you and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and many, many more to come.
You make me feel so great. Thank you so much. And I thank Gene and Marsha. You guys just have a good day, too. I appreciate everything. Y'all have a good time, and God bless all of you. Thank you so much.
And God bless you. All right. That was a nice surprise. Wanted to get that gentleman in there. I knew he was holding. And so now, Gene Chandler and Marshall Thompson. Pick up where we left off, and you know, and I'm with Mr. Bobby Rush because we have some songs sitting in queue that are beyond the Duke of Earl that I'm saving. I'm saving Duke of Earl, but tell us about "I Fooled You This Time" because that was a different twist for me because all of the other songs kind of woo the ladies in, and so you know we expected to land in your arms, but you fooled us on that one. Why'd you fool us?
Because they fooled me with it, you know, when I heard it.
Why?
What inspired it?
The last lap is mine. Yeah, well, it was a nice record written by Curtis Mayfield after the Duke of Earl and one or two other records came the stuff from Curtis, and I liked the way he wrote his songs, and I thought they were the kind of songs that I could sing well, and so I did quite a few of them, Just Be True, Man's Temptation, I Fooled You This Time, you know, and of course the big one, Rainbow, Nothing Can Stop Me. There's a story behind Nothing Can Stop Me. Curtis and I were on the road. He was playing some songs for me. And I picked out the ones I wanted. Man's Temptation was in there, but it was a song in there called Monkey Kong. So I told Curtis when he said, well, Cap, I can't let you have that one. I said, well, what are you playing for me for? I thought you were playing songs that I could get. Well, Eddie Thomas, our manager, wants us to do that. But if you can talk him out of it, because I was raising hell about it. I didn't have too many up-tempo songs, and I thought that was a hit song. So I called Carl because he knew Eddie better than I did, and I asked him to get these songs for me, and especially the Monkey Dime. So now when I went home, Carl said, I got all the songs you wanted me to get, Gene, from Eddie. And I said, oh, good. He said, but we need a favor from you. And I said, what's up? He said, Columbia Records said if we don't get a hit off of Major Lance on the next recording session, that they're going to drop his contract. And we think that this Monkey Time is perfect for Major Lance. Somebody say he used to do a lot of dancing or something. I don't know. But in any event, I was hot. It didn't bother me. I was doing well. So I said, okay. You know, and I gave it up because he was all in our stable. We were managed by Carl. We were recorded by Carl. And so I gave it up. Well, the rest is history. It became a hit for Major Lance. Well, the next recording session for Major, Carl would always call me over when he had things that he was going to record on somebody. And this was Major's turn. He said some songs that Curtis set. And I heard them all, and I said, Carl, Turnabout is fair play. I like this song I heard on this album that he's going to do on him, and I'd like for you to give it to me. He said, you got it. He said, Major's not going to say one single word. He don't mind giving it to you because he knew you gave him Monkey Time. And that song was called Nothing Can Stop Me. You know?
Wow.
So it's
wow.
Just a little story
wow.
Behind how.
Yeah. And then I really like Groovy Situation. Tell us about Groovy Situation. Now, you know, Marshall Thompson, he's told me, like, a lot of these songs are his favorite. But, Marshall, which one out of all that you told me about, which one is your favorite? Because I'm stuck. I don't know which one is my favorite now.
Well, you know, I was singing when after Gene had actually took me around to Houston, and Major Lance had took me to Houston, Texas, playing drums with him, and Major missed one of the shows at Ray Barnett's Cinder Club, and he was coming real late, so I was there with the drums, and Ray Barnett asked me, say, well, people's coming in like crazy, Major's not here yet. I said, well, I'll tell you what, let me sing a couple of songs just for give Major a chance to get to the club. So I end up singing Nothing Can Stop Me and let me see, One More Time to Test Willpower. I mean, I forgot the title name of the song. But
Man's
I sung
Temptation.
Man Temptation.
Man.
I sung both those songs. And I tore the house up, and I told Gene and Otis LaVelle, I said, man, you know what, man? I'm singing like Gene Chandler. And I did a good job with that. You know, I wasn't the lead singer of the group. Eugene Record was the lead singer, but I always had the Gene Chandler style because he was my, you know, idol on the stage and everything. I tried to be just like Gene Chandler, everything, steps, moving, and everything. Ever since I was at the Wrigley Theater, hearing them girls crying and hollering and throwing their panties up on the stage and throwing their stockings and everything, I said, I want to be like that. I want to be like that. So that's why I took to Gene so much, you know, and Gene just gave me and my voice was a baritone voice, it was low, and actually, he gave me my style today. I still got a little, when I do a little singing on stage, it always come out with that Gene Chandler style, you know, when I sing my song.
Right. Right. Wow. Now, you talk about his style. Let's talk about that style, Mr. Chandler, because, you know, there's one thing to perform, but you develop this character, if you will, as the Duke of Earl continued to manifest himself and add to you. How did that come about? Because the Duke of Earl became you, and you became the Duke of Earl. I mean, you personified just, like I said, acquiesced to this stage presence and this this beautiful romanticism that ladies just fall out for. How did all of that happen? When did you start dressing the Duke of Earl?
Well, it actually happened when they were doing the album cover.
Mm-hmm.
What you saw as the final product was not what they were trying to do. What they did
mm-hmm.
was they had me dressed like a You remember the colonial days when they had the triangle hats from England, and they
mm-hmm.
had the short stockings and the blouse with the jacket on and the triangle
mm-hmm.
hat.
The ruffles in the front.
Yes, yes. That's the way they
mm-hmm.
wanted me to look. And they had me holding the
pilgrim look.
The triangle hat in front of me. Like Napoleon was holding his hand inside of his coat. And I'm holding the track, and I looked at that picture. I got the negative from him, took it, and said, that's it. I'm not going to look like that. I want to look like a modern-day Duke. Anyway, big-time conversation went on for about a week and a half, and finally they agreed with me and went out and got me a top hat, some tails, it's okay for the jacket, but I wanted to be a modern-day Duke and not
mm-hmm.
back in those colonials. And the cape, the cane,
mm-hmm.
and the gloves,
mm-hmm.
and the monocle. And that's the picture
mm-hmm.
we ended up taking. So that's how I ended up having that kind of outfit on, being the Duke of Earl.
Wow. Now, we're going to listen to Nothing Can Stop Me. We're going to listen to the Duke of Earl. We're going to listen to I Fooled You This Time. And I, like I said, enjoy Groovy Situation. Oh, we're going to play them going out. I'm not going to hold you gentlemen up because you know the songs. But for our listeners and for everyone that's going to be partying with me for Mr. Bobby Rush's birthday, we're going to keep it moving and grooving. Tell us about Groovy Situation.
Well, I love Carl Davis in Brunswick, and I went out and started my own record company, and I was producing other records for other people like Backfill in Motion and that kind of thing. And I went into business for myself, and I signed with Mercury Records. I wanted to go pop with my records, and so I heard the Duke of Earl from a writer in St. Louis, part of the company that I had taken over called Bamboo Records, which is what Backfill in Motion was on. And I thought it would be a great pop record for me, and sure enough, it was. I ended up selling 1 million records on Groovy Situation for Mercury Records. So
wow.
That's how Groovy came along.
Wow. All right. Well, gentlemen, I have to tell you, I've taken you into overtime. We usually go about an hour on the show, but I wanted to take the time out and go off course and honor Mr. Herb Kent, your guys' brother in spirit, and we honor him, and he continues to reign in paradise. We also took a moment to say hello to Mr. Bobby Rush, another dear friend of you all that go way back in years, and you two go way back in years. So how did it feel to see each other when you did see each other the other week? I know it was under those circumstances, but I don't ascertain that you get to see each other that often. So how did it feel to see each other, Marshall and Gene, and when will you see each other again?
Well,
yeah,
who knows? Maybe on the 4th of July, Marshall, he'll get a chance to come back, but it just varies. Not as much as before, because I retired from the road back in March. Because, my business, I have real estate all across the country, and I'm invested in clothing stores, I got barbershops, and my last project is the Duke of Earl wines that are going to be coming out. And so I couldn't just keep running on the road doing that. I was doing it for fun and loving it all the time anyway. But I'm not going to run myself to death. So this wine is taking me to another level, so I have to stay on the case, and I had to end up retiring from the road. Now, I'm not going to never say never, because I do enjoy being out there, but right now business is too tight for me. I'm trying to run on the road.
Well, you know what? Having been given so many gifts from God, having been given so many gifts from God, to whom much is given, much is required. And so you're required to feed into these other gifts. So we're definitely going to have to stay in touch. I'm excited about the wine that you have coming out. We know that your website is jeanchandler.com for those that want to go and continue to enjoy your legacy in music and stay up to date with what's going on with you. Marshall Thompson, my brother, how did it feel when you saw Mr. Gene Chandler? And I know Marshall has some tour dates coming up. You can visit his website at www.shichi-lite.info to keep up with his schedule. How did it feel to see Mr. Gene Chandler, your good friend?
Well, it's always a pleasure. When I see Gene Chandler, I know it's some cash around. When I see Gene Chandler, I know I still got a checkbook waiting somewhere. that's my man. It's always a pleasure to see Gene. He's looking good. I know that he's still got that voice. I be waiting for him to sing all the time. I'm always learning something from him. And I just want to, he's my mentor. So he's going all the way, and I'm proud of him. He lasted. I didn't see him come and go, but Gene is still there.
Well, God has been good to me.
Amen.
What can I say?
Go ahead, Mr.
Thank
Cameron.
You,
I was just saying amen.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Marshall, for inviting me to speak with y'all this evening.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have the opportunity, and for you, Mrs. Black.
It has been a pleasure
meeting you before.
Absolutely. Right. Well, you know what? I want to thank you once again. I do have your email contact. I'm going to be asking you to keep me posted as your different ventures and businesses continue to culminate to fruition. That wine is going to take the globe. I want to thank you gentlemen both for taking out the time to have this conversation right here on Soul School Music, the Tribe Family channel. We're going to go out playing I Fooled You This Time, Groovy Situation, Nothing Can Stop Me, and lastly, Duke of Earl. You can catch up with me. I am Beverly Black, the creator of Tribe Family Channel and Soul School Music, a Gumbo for the Soul International Family brand. I am on Twitter at Gumbo for the Soul, on Tribe at Tribe Family US. And you can subscribe to our studio right here at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. So, gentlemen, have a rewarding and rich evening. And thank you so much once again for your talent and your time and, most of all, the legacy that you are leaving with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you.
All right, and here we go with Groovy Situation and the rest of this playlist on Tribe Family Channel, Soul School Music, with Marshall Thompson and Beverly Black. Good night, and God bless.
I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? I'm that girl. I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night. Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Good evening, sweet darling. May I ask your name? You seem to be lonely. Well, don't worry, I'm feeling the same. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination, that we should meet at a time like this. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination. You're something that I just can't mix. How about girl? I'm gonna make a mine if it takes all night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
How about girl? I'm gonna make a mind if it takes all night.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it? It's been a long time, sweet darling, since love has come my way. But I'm trying so hard to find the right words to say. Oh, it's a good situation and a splendid combination that we should meet at a time like this. Oh, it's a good situation, a splendid combination. You're something that I just can't miss. Oh, it's a groovy situation, a splendid combination that we should meet at a time like a day. Oh, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination. You're something that I just can't miss. Baby, baby, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination that we should meet at a time like a day. Oh, it's a groovy situation and a splendid combination. You're something that I just can't miss. Baby, baby, it's a groovy situation.
What? 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 hanging out, 'cause you and your friends really hurt my pride. So unexpected, you shot me down with all the fellas standing around. Yeah, please don't go, that's what they'll be saying.
Please don't go,
but I'm not playing, 'cause nothing can stop me. Can stop me. Though you and I were pretty close, I'm calling it quick, girl, 'cause it was you I really dug the most. You made me feel like I was 2 feet tall, while all the others laughed and swore. Yeah, please don't go, that's what they'll be saying. Nothing can stop me. No mind me having a blues. You've made me lose my cool. Fellas on the scene, they treat me so cold, and you so mean. Nothing can stop me. So bad do I feel inside. Checking out, 'cause you and your friends really hurt my pride. So unexpected, you shot me down with all the fellas standing around. Yeah,
please don't go,
that's what they'll be saying.
Please don't go,
but I'm not playing, 'cause nothing can stop me.
This world, nothing can stop the Duke of Earth. And you are my girl, and no one can hurt you. Oh no, yes, I Duke of Earth. We'll walk through my dukedom, and the paradise we will share. Yes, I.